At this time, your conference is being recorded.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the IRTP Part D Working Group on the 7th of July, 2014. On the call today, we have James Waddell, Angie Graves, Barbara Knight, Holly Raitt, Avery Doria, Kevin Erdman, and Graham Bunton. We have apologies from Paul Diaz. From staff, we have Amy Bivens, Lars Hoffman, Barry Cobb, Steve Chan, Marika Konings, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, James.
Thanks, Terry, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of IRTP Part D. And we were just recapping our discussions and our travels and our experiences in London. But before we get started, first off, does anyone have any updates to their SOI? Please indicate so by raising your hand. Okay. Seeing none there, I note that Bob Mountain and Walter Greiman have also joined. So welcome, gentlemen. And hopefully everyone had an uneventful trip home from London and a nice long weekend if you were in the U.S. Okay, so the draft agenda was circulated yesterday. Thank you for that, Lars. And depending on how much time we need for each of the component parts, I don't think that we may actually not use the entire call today, but we'll see. First up, wanted to review the final recommendation that we have on our plate, which is recommendation 14 regarding the requirements for transfers, gaming registrars to obtain an FOA. And we had a fairly healthy discussion on this topic in London and on our list as well. And would certainly, you know, I don't mean to oversimplify the issue, but would characterize it as, you know, our initial report stating that FOAs are just a formality for the vast majority of transfers, but in those instances where a transfer is considered to be invalid or is questionable, the FOA is really the only audit trail that is available to registrars and to... getting some music there.
And we'll isolate that line.
Good day, hello.
Hi, Arthur. You've joined the call.
Hi, thanks.
Hi, Arthur, and can you make sure to go on mute when you're not speaking, and also if you can join the Adobe Connect, that would be great.
Yes, I'm trying to connect to Adobe Connect. However, it keeps connecting on my system. It's using Linux or Ubuntu, so I'm not sure I will be able to see the chat room.
Okay, well, we'll proceed accordingly, and if you can join us, that would be great. So as I was mentioning, the initial report notes that FOAs are somewhat extraneous for most transfers. However, in those situations where transfers are determined to be invalid or in doubt, they are the only thing that the registrars or the arbitration panelists had to use to make a determination of whether or not the transfer was legitimate. We've since had a couple of folks raise the point that FOAs not only are perhaps extraneous, but in fact can cause harms. And we've had some discussions there from Rob Golding, who unfortunately hasn't joined us here, and also from Arthur when we were in London. And then that, I think, prompted a larger discussion about the role of FOAs and whether or not they continue to serve the purpose that they were necessary. And we've been on this topic now, I think, going on several weeks. So I think we're at a point now where we want to wrap this up and make a determination of whether we want to stick with our initial recommendation that FOAs be retained, or whether we want to reopen that. And if so, then we need to start proposing alternate language for that recommendation. so that we can bring this particular point in for a landing. So with that, I don't know if there's anyone that wants to weigh in with a cue. I had some homework myself, and I went back and discussed this particular issue with our transfers team, and can certainly shed a little bit of light on that as well, but wanted to give priority to the other participants on the call. Barry, go ahead.
Thank you, James. This is Barry for the transcript. You know, I think in all of our discussions up to this point, and certainly whether the working group decides to keep a FOA or not, there are two main requirements that seem to be necessary if the working group did choose to go the other direction. The first being some sort of audit trail. The second, which I think is one of the features of the FOA, is that it's almost a two-factor authentication kind of component for a transfer. And in terms of enhancing this discussion, I think if anything, you know, we do need, if in fact the FOA is leading to failed transfers, then it's very important that we understand and size how big of an issue that really is, and then dive deeper in those failed transfers. Did the FOA do what it was designed to do, or was it truly a break in the transfer? And so, the latter part of my statement, I think, is the most important before we can truly make that decision of whether FOAs are kept or not. And then secondarily, if we decided not to, then, you know, we need to try to, if some other method were to be created, retaining those two initial requirements. Thank you.
Thanks, Barry. I think that's a good point, something that we had discussed relative to FOAs being the secondary point of authentication. I think that Volker, and not to put Volker on the spot, but Volker also noted that was key for any sort of intermediary parties like resellers. But I think that you have a good point, which is that if FOAs were to be removed, what takes their place? Bob, you're up next.
Thanks, James. This is Bob. I couldn't agree more with Barry. I think we're going to make a change.
I'm sorry, Bob. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I'm having a very difficult time hearing you, and I don't know if it's just me, but dial up the volume a little bit.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Well, I tell you what, Bob, Volker's in the queue behind you. We'll go to him next, but I'll leave your place, and then when Volker's done, hopefully you'll be dialed in. Volker, you're up.
Yes, thank you, James. Mainly I wanted to reiterate the point that with the auth code alone, we can never be certain who is authorizing the transfer. It can be anyone in the chain of between the registrar and the registrant if there's multiple instances there. And therefore, the FOA is the only way that we really have of gaining the confirmation of the registrant that he actually wants and has requested this transfer. Of course, the FOA can be provided for multiple domain names, and if the WHOIS information is the same and the transfer is requested for those domain names. So I'm not sure if it's that much of a hassle. It's only becoming a problem when you are trying to move a large portfolio that belongs to multiple registrants. But in those cases, because the registrant has an agreement with the registrar under the current and the previous RAA, the registrant should have the opportunity to be to at least acknowledge that he accepts the new registrar's RAM registration agreement, and therefore I think that the RAA, the FOA, fulfills this function as well.
Thanks, Volker. Good points. I note that Rob Golding has joined the call, and Rob has had some interesting insights on this as well. So, Rob, hopefully you can join the queue as well. Welcome. But let's see if Mr. Mountain has dialed in and is ready to speak. Bob?
And this is Terry from staff. We're actually going to dial out to him right now. If you could just give us 30 seconds, perhaps.
Okay, we'll give you another 30 seconds. Thanks. And I think, Volker, you know, there was an interesting point here about, and I think it dovetails in with Barry's comment about if FOAs are failing in some situations, why are they failing? And I think you've hit on one of those scenarios, which is if there is a registrar or reseller that is attempting to move a portfolio of sponsored names to from one registrar to another, but the registrant is the one that has the agreement, then that could be a problem. And I think that we've also examined that in the course of discussing bulk transfers and how that Part B of this transfer policy really doesn't fit the bill for that scenario. And I think we see this occasionally when a reseller becomes a registrar, or when a registrar decides to give up its accreditation and become a reseller of another registrar. This can actually, then the idea of going out and obtaining an FOA from all of those registrants can be a significant burden. So that's, I mean, one scenario where this could be a problem. I was stalling for time there as well, but I don't know if Bob is on yet.
And he is on. Bob, are you able to speak at this time?
No.
Bob, your line is open.
Okay, can you guys hear me now?
Yay! There we are.
Hey. Sorry about that.
Take it away, Bob.
Yeah.
There's always one on every call. It was my day to be the one. I guess, in support, I think, strong support of Barry's comments, I think that if we are to recommend any sort of change, it ought to be based on, some quantifiable information. And I think we have enough people on this working group or within easy grasp of this working group where we could find out if there's, if the FOA is in fact causing the kind of volume or kind of failure in terms of transfers with the registrars involved. And that would, I think, be pretty easy for us to decide whether or not we had to open that one up or not. So that would be my recommendation.
Thanks, Bob. I went ahead and put myself in the queue because after our discussions in London, I went back to our team internally and just kind of brainstormed a little bit about this issue and whether or not we can envision the FOAs changing, being replaced, being altered, being modified, being improved, what the impacts would be. And the first thing I asked was, and I think this suggestion was made in London by Arthur, was the idea that an FOA would be required, but you would not necessarily hold up the transfer process pending the acquisition of the FOA, that the registrar would go forward without it. I think that the response that I got was kind of interesting, is that there are actually some registrars that are currently doing that. They are, at least one is known to us, and I believe they're operating out of China. And I believe that registrar has simply determined that if any of those transfers are challenged, that they will just essentially give the name back, and not attempt to make any effort to substantiate the transfer was legitimate. I'm not really sure what ICANN staff's position on that would be. If there were repeated incidents like that, I suppose the registrar could find itself in trouble, with compliance. But that, I mean, is one sort of one way of looking at this, is that there's a risk to proceeding with the transfer without the FOA, but no one is really watching in some regards. So, I did think a little bit more about this and whether or not it, and I think that this particular recommendation, even, you know, if we continue to maintain that the FOA is a required element of the transfer, I believe we could make some recommendations for the FOA to be improved and updated, for example, to be delivered through alternate delivery methods, not just email, for example, or SMS, and to cover those situations where large portfolios are being addressed so that a single FOA could cover a batch or a bulk of domain names. And other sorts of features like that that perhaps the FOAs were not initially designed to cover. So that's my piece on that and my follow-up homework from talking with our team internally. And I see that Rob is now in the queue. Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, sticking with what you were just saying, how are they trying to do the transfers? Where are they getting the EPPs from that would attempt to begin a transfer? They must be getting those from the registrant or the admin contact. You can't just invent them. I mean, they're, 15-character random string of junk. So, I mean, they must have EPPs to start the transfer, even if they're abandoning transfers that don't work and saying, oh, well, that one might not have been legitimate. They must be getting that information from somewhere to begin this process.
Thanks, Rob. Yes, so that was my understanding, is that they were asking only for the EPP and they were initiating the registrar to registry transfer correctly, but they were not obtaining an FOA from the registrant, nor were they keeping that FOA as an audit trail. They weren't accumulating those and archiving them in case any of those transfers went up. And so if any transfer was ever challenged, they just kind of threw up their hands and said, well, we don't have an FOA, just take the name back.
So they're simply relying on the fact that compliance, as the annual audit, only pick 25 domain names at random, and people only want to see a copy of the FOA if there's a challenge.
Right. And again, I don't recommend that this is a best practice. In fact, I think this would be the opposite of that, right? This would be probably something to be avoided, but it is just an acknowledgement that for example, if a registrar expected to do one transfer a year, perhaps it might be worth the risk for them to take this approach. Or if they their relationship with their customers was such that they had a personal one-on-one in-person relationship with the customers, then the FOA might seem like just an extra bit of paperwork that would be unnecessary. Not endorsing this practice by any means.
I can understand the seeing FOAs as an additional piece of paper that has no overall value. I mean, my own opinion, and it is just opinion, is that if the customer has gone to the point of ordering a transfer, giving you the EPP code, paying you for the transfer, then they've pretty much given you explicit details and authorization to transfer it, and sending them yet another email that they've got to acknowledge is simply blindsiding them yet again with something that they come back to you and say, but I already did this by ordering it and by accepting your terms and conditions and so on and so forth. Why do I have to click this as well? I can give you a simple example. One of our smaller acquisitions recently had domains all over the place, basically picked whichever registrar was cheaper that week for whatever domains the end customer wanted. We obviously would like those all under our own accreditation and on our own system. And so far, I think we've managed to get 11 out of 45 registrants to go through the process. Technically, I suppose we could probably fake it. I do have the login details for the various reseller accounts, and I can probably get the EPP codes. But what I can't do is get the FOA, and I can't get the registrants to click that final step anyway. So we're having to deal with quite a long, drawn-out process, which has now been going on 2.5 months, of trying to get these people to understand that they're not going to lose their domains and that the people they bought them from originally were just a reseller of a reseller of a reseller of a reseller, and we're not. We're an actual registrar, and they'd be much better off by dealing directly with the registrar because their domains are safer and the reseller can't just vanish overnight.
Okay, so I think that's good input. That's one of those scenarios that we were discussing where the FOA is actually holding up the process. It's not what I would consider a routine transfer, but it is creating friction where there shouldn't be any. So here's what I'm proposing. I think we've heard, in general, I think we hear that for the large number of transfers, FOAs are, I'm thinking the standard deviation here on either side of the curve, the most transfers, the bulk of them, it is just an extra step, neither benefit nor harm. However, we've got the long tail on either side of that curve. On one side, in the transfers that are claimed to be illegitimate or that are called into question, the FOA is the only mechanism by which control or validity or approval of the transfer can be established, to the satisfaction of the registrar and any outside authority like an arbitration panelist or ICANN. And on the other side of the tail, we have these unusual situations where we're talking about bulk transfers or we're talking about portfolio transfers or moving between resellers where the FOAs are causing problems and not allowing legitimate transfers to occur. So my recommendation is that we alter the language of our initial recommendation to read something like this. And Lars, I guess, I don't know if you can grab this as we go, but but it would be something along the lines of, the working group determined that for most transfers, most routine or most typical transfers, the FOA is an extraneous step. However, in those situations where a transfer is considered to be or is challenged or is disputed, the FOA is an essential element to establishing the validity of the transfer and the authorization of the registrar. And then starting again and say the working group also notes that the FOA can be a harm in some situations. And then we can list out, for example, transfers of large portfolios, mergers of resellers or resellers to registrars, and that the FOA, can hold up these transfers, and that the working group recommends that the FOA be, what do we want to say here, enhanced, improved, updated to allow for alternate delivery methods besides email. I think that the policy allows for fax or email, so that would give you an idea how dated it is. So we could say, for example, SMS, for example, through an interactive web page with, auditing capabilities, and also that the FOA could be combined with the inclusion of, hold off on that. I was going to say could be wound up with the auth info code, but I think that goes to Barry's point about two-factor authentication. So so I think we're trying to make it more flexible, more useful, more, retain the value that the FOA has when it's being used to dispute or to resolve a dispute, but to minimize the harms that the FOAs can cause in those other scenarios that we've outlined. So that's kind of where I think we're coming in for a landing on this one here. I see a lot of chat here. I noticed that Christine has joined as well, so welcome, Christine. So what I'm just going to propose that we take a swing at that on the list and see if we can come up with some language that leads us sort of in that direction. I've got a couple folks in the queue. Volker, you're not.
Thanks, James. I've just in the background opened up the policy on transfer of registrations between registrars, and there's actually a new version coming into effect on the 31st of January. And I think a lot of what you're talking about alternative means of delivery, this is already taken care of in the transfer policy, because it's making possible both delivery by paper copies as well as electronic copies, and these can even include electronic signatures, signatures conformance with national legislation, and email addresses and other methods. So I think before we craft the language stating that we have to open that up, we should just make sure that this isn't already open.
Thanks, Volker. Good catch. Before we go out and rewrite a whole bunch of new policy, let's take a look and see if that language fits the bill, and then maybe we can reference that as, you know, this is what we were thinking. One of the ways that it can be improved by making the FOA a little bit more user-friendly. Holly, you're up next.
Just a question. Picking up Rob's point, can we use language that is perhaps less prescriptive, but some kind of authority that does allow flexibility if the language, current language, doesn't do that? I also, though, have a question about, are we talking about the word harm, or is a better word something like barrier? This just implies an FOA might be harmful, and I'm not sure that's what we mean. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree with you. Harm may be a strong term. I think what we're saying is that if it's blocking legitimate transfers, then it's harming because it's going against the wishes of the registrant. But that might be, you know, it's failing to serve its purpose, or it's, you know,
yeah,
it's, as a procedure, it's malfunctioning. But I agree with you. The word harm implies, you know, someone's bottom, someone's financials or the body is being injured, and I don't think we want to go quite that far. Unnecessary delay
yeah.
That's a good one. Rob has that in the chat. So I think that's kind of where we're going with this, Holly.
Thank you.
The only thing that I want to be clear about, and maybe we need to shoehorn this in here as well, and just as a reminder, because I know that this has been a theme throughout all of this working group and previous working groups, is that unfortunately, the bad guys who do steal domain names as a matter of their bad actions, they pay very close attention to this policy and the practices of registrars. They know exactly what to do and what to say to get around the security. So, you know, any changes to the FOA should, I think, be mindful of the legitimate needs of legitimate transfers, but also should be sufficiently robust to prevent the bad guys from, finding a giant loophole that they can drive a truck through. And we certainly don't want to create new vulnerabilities in an existing process. But, you know, if it's something that is existing today, I think we could certainly push off from that as a model. So I see that the queue is clear. I think it falls to Lars and I to maybe take a stab at reworking the language of Recommendation 14. And Lars has given me a green check mark, and we will have that to this list possibly by the end of day Tuesday. Does that sound doable, Lars?
Sorry, I had to come off mute. Yes, absolutely. That is doable, James.
Okay. And then later in the week, we would also be able to post the entire red line of the initial report and the changes that were taken on board by the public comments and our subsequent discussion of them. And that brings us then to item number 3 in our agenda, which is the remaining timeline for this PDP. And Lars, I don't know if you can load that. Oh, you're way ahead of me. Look at that. So here we are towards the bottom of this page here. We are finalizing our recommendations on the 7th of July. That leaves us, it looks like, 2 more meetings. And then let me scroll down here just a minute. It looks like the schedule now calls for us to finalize our final report through the 25th of August. I may be optimistic here. I don't know that we need that much time, but it's something that we can take a look at. What I'm recommending is that by next call, we kind of get everyone's agreement on the language for recommendation number 14, and then we begin the process of reviewing the changes to our interim report. We'll definitely take 2 weeks on that, maybe a little longer, but hopefully not as long as is indicated in this work plan. And then we should be ready to publish our final report, go through it one more time, make sure that we have our consensus levels established, and then we'll be able to put that out to the community. So that's the work plan that lies in front of us. I think that we're getting close, and perhaps we don't need as many meetings as are budgeted for here. So does anyone have any thoughts or questions or concerns about the work plans? My only concern or question is looking at August, do we see any, I know that starts to run into vacation season in some parts of the world, and I'm just wanting to make sure that we don't lose our momentum. So if we can really drive this process through to the end of July, then maybe everyone can have August off, even the Americans. So that's the plan that's in front of us. Does anyone have any thoughts or comments on the schedule? Okay, well, let's proceed accordingly then. Fantastic. So the next meeting, as we indicated, will be this time next week on July 14th. And we will, in the interim, we will hash out the language for recommendation 14 on the list, and we will begin the review of our final report on that call.
Yeah.
Does anyone have anything else? So otherwise, we can give ourselves about another 30, 25 minutes back to your day.
We just, if I can say something.
Is that Arthur?
Yes, it is Arthur here.
Go ahead.
I was unable to connect to the meeting, so I was wondering if somebody could help me with troubleshooting that. And I do have some replies to all the things that have been said, but I will send them via email if that's okay.
Certainly okay. And Lars, you have your hand up. Is that you're volunteering to help Arthur, or?
Yes, absolutely. I'll be in touch with Arthur and with our IT guys and see that we can hook him up for the next call.
Yes, please. Thanks.
Thank you, Lars. And then Arthur, I would say, you know, if you have your responses ready, just hang on to those. We'll put posting some language as well. That might be a good prompting for some of the points you might want to raise.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Well, with that, thanks everyone, and we'll see you next week when we start to dive into our final report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Bye bye.
Thank you, everyone, for joining today's conference. You may disconnect at this time. Aisha, please stop the recordings.